Cool. Should we get started? All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Last session of the day. You guys are filled up with popcorn and meatloaf and snacks and all that jazz. Good to hear. So the premise of our talk today is that you are all mobile developers. It's sort of a loose thesis, but the idea is that if you love C# and you love Visual Studio, then you are all, as of today, mobile developers with the ability to target new platforms, have a new perspective on what an app should be, have a new perspective on how to connect yourself to services. And no good story about the future of a developer is complete without revisiting sort of the beginning. I remember these days super fondly. I can't remember how many of you were under like 25, but I actually remember these days quite fondly. It was sort of a badge of honor to buy Windows and Multiplan and get diskettes and get CD-ROMs and put them up on your shelf and have people call you and pay long distance charges to figure out how to install the Excel. I love when people prefix brand names with prepositions. It's just one of my favorite things in the world. But this is sort of a fond memory for me, because this is what the world used to be. And sort of knowing where things are going is interesting, but knowing where we came from is really interesting to me as well. And things were good for a while. I mean, we had some nice software out there for a while. A lot of us remember Clippy. This is actually from a Microsoft video, which you can watch on YouTube. I highly recommend it. And then Clippy was great. I think Apple missed out on Clippy with iOS 7. I think that was a missed opportunity. But then things got really good. Desktops got faster. They got cheaper. You could get your grandparents one. And things got smaller. You went from a desktop form factor to an LCD, to a laptop, to a Retina device, and things were pretty good for a really long time. But never was that quantum leap until we figured out something really critical. We figured out a way to put electrons in one place into another place and develop a protocol around it. And we called it the interwebs. And I dislike the metaphor of a lightning bolt for services, because it's just literally transfer of electrons. And the web was good for a really long time. We got to connect things to other things, and then we started putting those things in the cloud. And things were good for a while after that, and enterprise architects got to do diagrams like this. And things were good for a while. And then, we realized just having these computers in a cloud environment wasn't good enough. We needed software to put in our clouds. We installed SharePoint on them. And things were good for a while. Things were really quite nice. But we needed that next quantum leap. We needed a new way to emerge beyond sitting at a desk and putting ourselves in front of content or in front of people or in front of a productivity suite. We needed something new. And then we got it. Devices began to emerge as the key contextual mechanism for us to engage with new services. Devices now know where we are, how often we're computing, how often we spin up specific apps, how often we connect to our favorite services, how often we engage in order to bring an experience that we want and seek after. And it's been extremely well received. You know what's cooler than 12 million? 27 million downloads of Office for iPad in the last 46 days. You can do that too. You just don't know it yet. But that's just the beginning. I mean, this is a super successful app. You can have that too. But you as a developer aren't really, your value isn't necessarily what's happening today and building software for today. Your value is around tomorrow. And what I think is really interesting is the experience of tomorrow is sort of situated around this. Not Azure, this stuff. So Google wants to tell me that I can go out into the African wilderness and capture things with glass and be a fashionista with glass and have an experience that's amazing and ride my bike in Marin County and capture my favorite moments. But wearables are sort of moving beyond that too. It's not just about what you see, but where you are and the information you need when you go there, right? It's not just about these rectangles in our pockets anymore. Or at least, you know, that's not the future. Maybe a little bit. But in general, we want more information that's relevant to us. And the us is really critical for me to understand as a person who writes mobile apps for a living and ensures that other people have a really great experience writing mobile apps for their customers. It's about people. It's about the information on the devices that you want, connected to the services you want, with the context and the intelligence around all of that. So that's sort of the premise of our story, is how do we turn you as a C# developer who's targeting Azure, who's targeting the Windows desktop, who's targeting Windows Forms still, how do we turn you into a developer for the next generation of devices and services? How do we enable you to become a mobile developer too? Now, first of which is, which I'll talk about later, is yeah, you can target these devices too. But first of which is sort of retooling a little bit. It used to be that you only got to target specific platforms, but if you sort of think, you know, what is your position as a Microsoft developer? This is actually from a video that's really awesome. The Office team does this every couple of years. It's a video around the future of Microsoft's vision. I highly recommend you check it out. But lost connection here. If you're looking to figure out what Microsoft's next play is, I think it's pretty apparent, and it doesn't involve this. You needed a bridge to be able to do this kind of stuff without having to think about it. That is sort of the perfect world. And if you can figure out what this code does, I'd be super impressed. I looked at this my first day writing an iPad app just to like sort of see if I could fake garbage collection on an iOS device, and this is sort of what I ended up with in a while loop. This is how you do sort of memory management at an odd level in Objective-C. But you don't want any of that because, you know, in general, you guys as developers are sort of spoiled. You get these amazing tools, and you spin them up, and you put them on four monitors, and you hit play. I mean, literally, the debug button just reminds me of the play button. And it just boots up, it establishes a debugger connection. You have an amazing tool set. And you have the ability to put this in Azure, which is this amazing service, this amazing platform to build apps. So if we look at our story, my goal is to get you here. My goal is to get you here and be empowered to do amazing things with C#. Because we all know that C# is a great language. We all know that if we had a choice, we would be able to develop in this language for all the platforms that we want. And with Xamarin, you can. So my name is Anuj Bhatia, and why do you care about who I am and what I do and what I'm excited about? I'm an enterprise account manager at Xamarin. My entire job is to figure out what makes the large evil corporations tick and why they sort of want to build mobile apps and sort of help them get there, but almost foremost is not have a repeat of this. You would be surprised at the number of enterprise architecture teams who want to build common frameworks for error logging and error bubbling onto the main thread. You would be surprised at the number of people who think that a modal dialogue is the end-all be-all of interruption of workflows. You would be surprised at the number of people who think that the standards for desktop development and the standards for web development apply to the desktop. You are not writing your granddaddy's HTML5 on these iPads. We're not animals, as Miguel likes to say. So we all know this, right? We don't want to sort of retrograde or retrofit our experiences from the desktop to the mobile devices. And it's because people have come to expect great experiences. It's no longer that the first experience was a console or a terminal or this ability to basically take your code and input it and then get a result out. The first experience for a new generation of consumers of these devices and services is applications like Facebook and Twitter and really sexy apps, whether they come from the enterprise and they have 3D diagrams of amazing experiences or whether they're simple line of business apps. There's just a special attention to detail that requires not only a retooling of your skill sets, just a slight retooling, but a rethinking of the way that you build mobile apps. And we see this in the world. So this is something from our friends at Flurry Analytics. It is a distribution of engagement on mobile devices. And if you take a look at it, it's really quite surprising. It is a split, not 50-50, but 84-16, or 86-14, I apologize. The way in which people engage on the devices that they pull out every 10 minutes, so to speak, right? The way people engage with these devices is with applications that they know will work, otherwise they get uninstalled. No longer are we just going up to the browser and typing in gmail.com or outlook.com and expecting the same experience in Safari or Internet Explorer or Chrome. We're not expecting that. We've come to expect really great experiences, whether they're social experiences or gaming experiences or entertainment experiences with HBO and Netflix, or 4% productivity. That's your opportunity. You guys, I guess a majority of you might be enterprise line of business developers. Some of you might come from the entertainment realm. Some of you might come from completely different industries that I'm missing entirely, that are just not commonplace. This is the opportunity for you, is to bring your ideas to the 86%. And you don't do it like this. So this is a graphic from the App Store for Facebook's second gen application. They tried a little experiment and tried to give us some HTML5 in their web view as a sort of a hybrid application where they expected really smooth scrolling on a list, and they probably tested it with like the iPhone 5S, and it was super fast in Mountain View, but not really great on your grandma's iPhone 4 with 256 megabytes of RAM. So they made the switch. They made the switch to the experiences that people expected. And it's funny what happens when you meet people's expectations. You get pretty good reviews. And it's funny what happens when you exceed their expectations. They say very nice things about you in the press. So that's what Facebook did. And again, we think that a C# developer can get that same experience to consumers, whether it be enterprise consumers, whether it be your plain old B2B app or a B2C app that you guys are distributing to a majority of your customers. And our customers tend to agree. So this is sort of our growth in the last 2.5 years. I'm really excited to have over 600,000 developers join us on Xamarin in the time that I've been here, with 32,000 new developers joining us every month. And what's really surprising is that not even a majority of it is here in the US. Imagine that. For the first time, you could put your apps everywhere and not rely on a $600, $700, $800 PC to have your app on a website or have it on a desktop. It could be on a $150 Android smartphone in Singapore, and it would be the exact same experience that I got on my Nexus 5. Same quality. Really nice. And our customers tend to really enjoy that optionality, that freedom, that power to be able to take their C# and put it on all of these platforms. Some of these companies may actually be in the room, which is kind of nice. But I could tell you stories and stories about the people that I've come to talk to over the last few years. I've been writing, you know, Java, Objective-C, C# for a while now, and it's just history repeating itself for me. It's, we have this code base that rounds numbers, and I want to put it on an iPad, or I want to put it on this WinRT tablet. Right, super simple scenario, but really important to Halliburton, who drills oil, or really important to Sagittim, who does CRM and needs to really calculate the price of a sale. And of course, this is something that I could tell stories and stories about, but you know, in general, people have use cases, right? They have use cases like being able to take a device and service 22,000 elevators worldwide, being able to take a device and intelligently understand where their next trip needs to be, to give them the context to engage with services and be empowered to make the right decision in real time. And of course, somebody needs to build those apps. And we think it's you. We think you are the best suited to take your skills and your expertise with your development experience in C# and leverage the tools that you know and love to build the best possible experiences for the devices that you want to target. And we're really excited to show you that. But that's not good enough. Right? There's no magic here. It's a compiler, and it's a runtime, but what it gets you is something really phenomenal. You get to reach 2.6 billion devices worldwide with your code base. You get to build an experience that people will write not only nice reviews about, but phone home about. I get emails, you know, every couple of months from people who say, hey, this app that I wrote got this amazing review, and this person emailed me and said, thank you for unleashing, you know, my service to this device. Thank you for being able to do it in a timely manner. Be able to take this C# code base and do it within a couple of weeks, develop this app. And then be able to, as a developer, really accelerate where you are to where you want to go, and be able to take the things that you want, these services that you want, to these devices. And of course, you know, there's an ecosystem behind this. There's traction around, you know, using your favorite libraries like JSON.NET and RedSharp and HTTP client and your favorite database encryption algorithms. All the stuff that you know and love from your experience today is super relevant. So let's talk a little bit about how it works. So there are some of you who are here who are familiar with Xamarin, have heard of it, maybe saw it in the keynote today, or maybe we're at Build, or we're following Build, or have just been following Xamarin, and or Mono, and Miguel, or what have you. But it's super important to understand your options, what the landscape is like. And first and foremost, when people think of native and cross-platform, they think of these siloed code bases, right? So if you think of repositories of code, this is just this massive silo of C# code for Windows that's either on the Windows desktop, the Windows server, you know, somewhere on an RT device. And then we think about iOS devices like iPad and iPhone. We think about, you know, retrofitting sort of this Objective-C runtime and integrating it nicely with an iPad and saying, hey, we're going to write 200,000 lines of Objective-C, and we're going to build this iPad app. Or we're going to, you know, write 400,000 lines of Java and deploy it to this Nexus 7 tablet. That's the way people think about native and cross-platform today. And we think that's sort of an odd model. And we think that's a model that people generally don't like, and they feel the pain quite quickly of that sort of siloed approach. So they turn to app generation models. It's sort of this black, opaque box where you input some lowest common denominator code, whether that's ActionScript or JavaScript or CSS and HTML. If you ask the Android engineers at Google what their preferred model for scaling up and down on Android devices is, it sure isn't CSS. It's native code. So this sort of thing is kind of out. If you're building an app for your enterprise and it needs to work and it needs to scale, you can mix in this model very delicately and appropriately, but you don't want something like app generation. You want to make a very strategic decision to take the HTML5 approach when you want to. So that models out for a holistic app. What you really want is something completely new. You need a completely new runtime and approach to leveraging your skill set and also building native apps. So what Xamarin is a native, no compromise platform for developing apps. Simple as that. And the way it works is, if you look at this, you can think of a solution tree. And a solution tree generally has some projects. If you look at the shared C# backend, this is akin to a shared project or a shared source project. And if you think of your targets, like iOS and Android and Windows, you can effectively just apply the project metaphor to these specific platforms. So at the end of the day, you will in fact have four projects in your solution. One is your .NET library, two is your iOS project, three is your Android project, and then four is your Windows, phone, RT, desktop platform, right? So you can pick your targets as you need. And then sort of how it works from a concrete perspective, you know, I had this experience of being able to pull code from my my Windows XP, Windows Forms app about 4 years ago, 5 years ago now. And I thought to myself, hey, this wonderful thing called iPad is out. I have about 100,000 lines of code that I want to bring over. Let me just try about 200 and see what happens. So I ripped out all the Windows-specific code, right? So if you look at the way Windows APIs work today, it's effectively splitting the front end from the back end, right? You've got HTTP web requests calling to some API, and you've got this front end that has a button, like, you know, in WPF or in Windows Phone or, you know, this XAML layer, this UI layer. So you have something that talks to the back end and then something that presents something on the front end. And when you look at Xamarin, your goal is basically to fit as much in that shared business logic. So what I did was took all of that services layer code out that talked to my XML web service, and I put it on the iPad. And the way I did it was leveraging the native UI API for iPad while still writing everything in C#. So I literally just copied and pasted all of my HTTP web request code, stuck it in a static service class, and when I needed to develop a list or a button in iOS, I leveraged UIKit. So UIKit is their custom rendering and layout engine, their UI toolkit for iOS, specific to iOS. And you know, they have all these ancillary APIs like iBeacon and Core Graphics and Core Motion, really tying directly into the device. So what I want you to take away here is that you can access all of these APIs, not just a subset that's related to lists and buttons and text labels and text fields, not just the simple APIs, but all the APIs, whether you're doing complex maps or complex graphing or doing really sweet animations and really immersive experiences, or if you work in retail and iBeacons are important to you, or if you work in, you know, healthcare and Bluetooth is important to you. Regardless of what your use case is, if you're developing for iOS, just like I was 4 years ago, everything I could do as an Objective-C developer 4 years ago, I found I could do in Xamarin with C#, because we give you 100% of those APIs coming for iOS. And the same happens to be true for Android. I took those same 200 lines and I ported them to Android, and oddly enough, all of that service layer code was super portable. I was able to leverage the native view layer, the native navigation layer, the native NFC layer, and bring that over to the Android tablet. And then, you know, NFC was actually unique to Android. NFC is still a native API that's still on Android, and it's really great. But it really highlights the fact that, you know, anything you can do with Java, and Java has an asterisk next to it, you can do in C# with Xamarin. And if those of you are following the sort of Java IP debate, I won't comment there, but it really highlights the power of being able to use C# to write the same kinds of applications, literally the same kinds of experiences that a Java Android developer could leverage. Now, just to highlight sort of on how the runtime and the compiler works, this might be a little bit of a history lesson for you guys, but C# doesn't just like run magically on a device. There's usually a compiler step to take this managed language, this beautiful, expressive managed language, and have it actually run nicely on a device. So what we have is our own runtime that invokes to the native code for the UI and gives you a native execution engine. So we call it the Xamarin runtime. It's based on Mono. And what we do on iOS, the kernel actually prohibits execution of code in memory. So we actually JIT all of the IL code. So you turn C# into IL. IL executes via a JIT engine usually. We basically JIT to disk. And then we run all that code natively into a static executable. from the disk, right? And then on Android, we interface directly as a peer with Android's runtime. So there's two Android runtimes right now. There's Dalvik and Art. We interface natively both of those runtimes. So when you, you know, ask for a button from the iOS runtime, you get a native UI button back. You get a pointer to that native button. You can set up touch event handlers to that. And then when you ask for a button from Android, you get a native Android button. It's black and Metro-y, but not quite, and gray. And you get all that jazz, and you can attach a click event handler to that as well. But what's really sweet about Xamarin is that you get the ability to not only attach events to it, but use that lovely async await stuff. So you just do plus equals async, and it gives you the expressiveness that you expect, that you would expect as a Windows developer or a C# developer on Windows. So in the end, this is, you know, a native application development experience without having to compromise on sort of what you are able to do. And it's not really enough for me to just say it works. It's not really enough for me to just say it looks and feels good. I think it's important to sort of show it off. Now, a couple of you stopped by the booth today. And so what I'm going to show off to you is the Xamarin Store app. You can actually go to xamarin.com/sharp-shirt and download this code today and run it on your device or in your simulator, on your Windows desktop, on your Mac. You can do all this today. What I'm going to do is sort of augment this and attach it to Azure. I am going to connect this sample application, connect it to Azure Mobile Services, but I'm going to add a little bit of a twist and attach it to Adel. So let's get in and see how this looks.
Great.
Quick sanity check. Do I need to bump the font on up for the people in the back? Would that be useful? Just raise your hand if that. Yeah, cool. No worries. I've done this roadshow before. I could dig that. So let's try 22. How's that? A little bit better? Cool. Appreciate it. So I'm going to follow along with the to-do items that I have here. But first, let me sort of show off the app. So I have this iOS simulator that's over here. A couple of you might recognize the models that we have here. We have the wonderful Jessica Steger, who's manning the booth with us today at, I think, row 1700, if you guys feel like stopping by. So this is a native app. It is a beautiful e-commerce style application, except when you pick through products, it's not, you know, not things off Amazon. It's basically a set of shirts and swag that we've provided to our customers. So you can go in here and select a variant that you want. You can pick men's or women's. And of course, swag is free. Nice. You can pick your size. A native input control comes up. This isn't abstracted. Every single one of these items is native and has native animations. I'm going to go ahead and pick medium because I'm feeling slimming today. So I'm going to add this to the basket, and you'll see this here. Let me zoom in. We actually have this nice little Ken Burns animation. So he's just like coming at you. So what we actually do a transform animation on this with a sort of long time span. So he just slowly comes right back at you and fades in and out. And then also really nice here when you add it to your basket, it sort of slowly animates it over, right? So these are actually really simple animations using the native iOS APIs. Really easy to transform. Whether you have these, you have these timings in your XAML app today, you can just apply these same concepts to your iOS app with Xamarin. So when I jump out a little bit and I go to my basket, I can check out with my basket. So I selected this shirt. Let me check out. So what it's going to do is it's going to call over to the Azure Adel service and sort of bring me in here. And I think my internet should be working. Yep. And I'm already authenticated. So let me just show you what this app is all about from a developer's perspective. So what I did was I have this PC portion as a VM. You could have either a Mac desktop or a Mac laptop sitting right next to your two-screen desktop environment or laptop environment. So you do need a Mac in order to write iOS apps. If you're writing Android apps, you can effectively just have a single PC with Visual Studio running against an Android device or an Android emulator on your screen. So really quite nice. And then if I flip over on the Mac side, I sort of had this build host. So it's not magic. You still need a Mac. You still need a way to compile the native code for your platform, in this case iOS. So what I've done is I've connected my Mac to my PC, and I've got this debug session loaded up with Visual Studio. You'll notice this sort of orange tint around Visual Studio, which they introduced in 2013, which was super nice. Lets me know I'm actually debugging, and not just in ghost mode. So that's pretty sweet. Now let's show off the architecture. In reality, it's just the solution tree. So if we look here, we have these nice build scripts. They're written in F#, which we absolutely love here at Xamarin. And then we have what's really nice and introduced in Update 2 for Visual Studio 2013, which is shared source projects. Some of you may convolute shared source with universal apps. It's really exciting enhancement to Visual Studio that allows you to seamlessly link files or source projects from your different targets. So here what we have is really a majority of our code. We have all of our backend services connecting to Azure. We have sort of these helpers, like extension methods on top of the APIs that we'd love and like to touch. So list wasn't quite perfect enough for us, so we created some extensions on top of that. So if you have extension methods in C# that you like to use, just throw them in the shared code. And then we have all of our user models. I've talked to people who have, I think, on the order of 200 projects and about 50 solutions in their source tree. And they were able to take somewhere around 70, 80% of their code and bring it over. So this might look like a naive implementation with like order and product and user. But imagine if you have 2-3 million lines of code that you're bringing over. Tremendous benefit not have to rewrite that into once in Objective-C, once in Java, and then turn that into a WinRT app and sort of augment your APIs. So here we have sort of an order object, which looks super simple. It just goes in and collects a bunch of projects and can serialize using JSON.NET, which we all know and love. So pretty sweet. And of course, we have this authentication client. We're actually leveraging Azure Active Directory here. So what I like to do is go in here and authenticate that ad. So I like to go in here and authenticate against our library called Xamarin Auth. Xamarin Auth will connect to Azure Active Directory and go in and jump in and say, hey, this is my Active Directory server. I can federate it with something that's on-premise, and this is my credentials. What it'll do, in fact, is load this up and where's my simulator? Yep, it'll load this web view up and say, hey, enter in your credentials. I'll go talk to Active Directory in Azure and then bring something back down, and that'll be my token, right? So once it's completed, it'll take me to, I've already authenticated, so it's cached here for me. It has my name in there. Once it's completed, I actually get the ability to just jump in and enter in all my information. So this is something that you can do today in order to sort of win a free shirt. We're really excited to launch this campaign. So all you have to do is just type in your information. So 1855 Xamarin. We're at 394 Pacific Avenue in San Francisco. Floor 4, if any of you care to visit us. San Francisco, 94111. Nice little transition here. It automatically recognizes that it's gone from a free text field into a pre-selected list. So I can go in here, good old US of A. And of course, I'm in California. So once I'm done with this, I hit place order. Oh, well, that's lame. I must not be connected here. Thankfully, I've gone ahead and I've done this before. I've gone ahead and loaded up Azure over here. So you can go into Sharpshirt today, but I actually have sort of my my services here, and if I go back over to the browser, I've already persisted my data object up to the cloud. So how does that work? How did I step through these authentication steps? Well, if you look here, I've got all of my services, right? My directory service, my Azure mobile service, my SQL Azure database, I think it's called, or my SQL database in Azure. And what I've gone in here into Visual Studio, I've created an Azure service. So aside from the authentication step, I've actually created a first-class integration with Azure. So I'm not just pumping JSON up and down. I'm using the Azure Mobile Services client-side library. And then what I'm doing is I'm initializing my mobile service client and pushing up an order table, right? So these shirts exist as orders in our object graph, and we just push them up to a server. And we use this wonderful async await to gather this object from your selection with your size, with your selection in our app, and push it up to Azure. So every couple of weeks, we'll ship out a bunch of shirts to people who download and run this app as they sort of input this into our database. So that's super nice. But what I do want to show off is sort of the same shared code referenced in Android. So I've got this same source tree referencing Azure Mobile Services, JSON.net, and I'm leveraging the same object hierarchy. And of course, when I want to transition from another platform, I have to have that native UI. And so to help you out, we have this wonderful designer for Android. So Android has this notion of a layout XML hierarchy. So if I go in here to my bragscreen.xml, once my order is complete, I can design this first-class experience. I can actually just go in here to the toolbox. If I stop debugging over here, I get this toolbox over here. And I can just add another button. I can search for it. Just add another simple button to this graph and call it whatever I want. And I just add things to my graph and style them as I need right inside of Visual Studio with our designer. So you'll get the same experience for iOS and Android in our beta channel. And you'll get the same native experience that you would as if you were writing an iOS app. So that's pretty cool. You basically get the ability to leverage all the services that you want with the native APIs that deliver the experience that you want, all integrated into Azure, using the same sort of methodologies that you're used to. And of course, if you go to xamarin.com/sharpshirt, you can inspect this source tree further and sort of figure out how to build a great native experience using Xamarin. But let me sort of take a step back and highlight for you how all of this works. So I sort of, you know, rushed through the demo in order to give you an overview of sort of how Xamarin works from a first run experience perspective, and sort of how you can build these native API or leverage these native APIs that tie into backend services. And that's kind of nice. But what you really care about, and probably what your boss cares about, is this whole code sharing option bit. And remember, we talked about Xamarin has this unique approach with tying front-end native APIs or device-specific APIs back to the C# backend code, right? So your view models, your model layer, all of your middle-tier business logic, all of your utilities, that's super nice. But there are some unique approaches that you need to know about that have sort of changed in the last sort of 6 months, and that's a function of us working with Microsoft to deliver the same kinds of experiences that you guys expect from a Windows perspective, back over to iOS and Android. So the first of which is universal apps. Again, sort of a misconception around how universal apps work, but it's effectively a really nice way of just sharing code based off of the file linking based approach back over to different platforms. So it's available in Visual Studio 2013 today in beta, and we'll make it available for our Mac users in Xamarin Studio very soon. I think it's already there in beta as well. So this is one approach that you guys can use today to sort of share code coming from a C# development background. The second of which is PCL. People like to call it Pickle and Nuget. There's a heated debate going on right now around what is the best way to share code. Is it shared source projects? Is it PCL, whether you're targeting Windows Phone and Windows RT, or whether you're targeting Azure and some client-side implementation? I think they both have a really nice approach. But the reality is, if you have an extremely expressive code base that's extremely nuanced, PCL is probably not for you. And shared source is probably where you want to go. But if you want to be truly portable and leverage a subset of those native APIs, well, it makes a lot of sense to go back to PCL. And that's because you can pick and choose what your targets are. Right? You can pick and choose what your targets are by definition. You can determine the portability of your code. Right? So this is actually really nice because suddenly you can say, hey, I don't care about Silverlight 5. and you can just target the platforms that you want. Really pretty nice. And of course, we love PCL so much that we're moving a lot of our code sharing story over to PCL. I think they've actually changed PCL profiles on us. I think it's like 4.6.9 or something like that. Now, Profile 78 is just a subset of that. And of course, we're bringing a lot of the stuff that's been announced in the .NET Foundation over to this, first of which is Monodata SQLite. We're working with Microsoft on their SQLite implementation to augment that. Couchbase, which is this really nice database to be able to talk to and have client-side and have them sync up nicely. System.drawing, which is actually extremely nuanced in order to plug into those native rendering and layout engines in order to draw this stuff in a common way. We're sort of taking hold of system.drawing and making it our own and bringing it to new platforms, which is super exciting. And of course, there'll be more and more of that. And then we have a nice way of presenting this to you guys. So this is our component store. It's got over 150 awesome components. And I know this because I was one of the first people that worked on it about two odd years ago, maybe more, 2-3 years now. So this is a batch of really awesome components that you guys can use. You've already seen Azure Mobile Services. If you guys use SAP or Salesforce, we partnered with those guys to bring you a really nice, seamless connector. All you do is click on one of these components, add them to your app, and it gets included in your references automatically. It's package managed for you. It's version managed for you. And there's also libraries like database encryption and charting controls that you guys know and love and like to show off in your apps. And of course, remember I talked about the next generation of devices and experiences. Well, you know, we're there too. You can actually download both the Google Glass Explorer SDK as well as the Android Wear SDK, both of which are available for you guys to use just by hitting the download button. Automatically downloads it to your project on your Android side and then brings that experience directly to you. And suddenly you get to, you know, be a glasshole too. So that's sort of the platform side of the business. And what I'm really excited about as well is Test Cloud. From my perspective, you know, we've talked to a bunch of people who are doing development today for mobile devices, and they seem to have invested about 2 years in them, and you know, whether they wrote them in Objective-C or Java and C# or what have you, they seem to have a fundamental problem. They're having their developers test their apps. Some people are laughing because they know the pain of this, but by and large, QA departments have historically done testing of apps. It's been really nice. You write this code, whether it works or not, somebody on the other end of the building will tell you, and then you go back and forth for 6 months, and then somebody will suddenly realize you haven't shipped. And that's bad news. So from my perspective, what I've always been looking for as a mobile developer is this tool that gives me this short feedback cycle, right? It lets me start right away and then gives me this nicely timed feedback cycle, whether that's, you know, 6 minutes or 6 hours, right? Immediate or overnight, right? Not 3 months later when I send this off to QA somewhere in the Philippines. But I want to have this lever, right? I want to be able to test across hundreds of real devices. So what this is a way for you to script either Ruby or C# and target hundreds of real devices, right? So if you have a mobile app and you want to deploy it simultaneously to hundreds of real devices and get access to all of this nice hardware in a cloud-based environment, sort of like Azure but for smartphones, you know, this is something that's readily available to you. So it gives you that lever. But it also connects to all of your ALM bits, right? So if you have TFS, or if you have Jenkins, or if you have Team City, or if you have you know, Davis in your environment, you can plug this in and get immediate access to them. But better than that, you can get immediate feedback back to your environment, right? So it gives you a really first-class way to tie in your mobile dev story with your QA story, and then get nice reporting based off of that in our UI. But something that's really, really critical is this whole object-based testing bit. Now, we targeted iPad at my first mobile job, and it was great, except it was only iPad 2, and it was only pre-Retina, so there was no resolution issues. And we used to go in and say, okay, we'll just hard code the coordinates. boy, were we in for a shock when iPad 3 came out with a Retina screen. That was not fun. So what we had to do was completely re-architect our QA environment, re-architect the way the app was written, have it scale up to the iPad 3 resolution with Retina, and that made my life really horrible. And imagine if I had to do that on Android, right? Imagine that if I had to scale up organically to all the different device sizes and pixel densities and screen size ratios and have that just work. And every time a new form factor was introduced, I had to scale that. So from my perspective, having an object-based testing suite was really important to me as I was evaluating this stuff. Forget the fact that it's just really hard to scale a QA practice across hundreds of real devices. I'm not sure how many of you guys are doing mobile development today, but having devs sit there and with a suite of devices and just test them every time they have to do a regression pass is really, really difficult. And at one point, I basically had to support iPad 1, 2, 3, the 4 had just come out, and then the Air had just come out, and I had to support them all in tandem. The CEO came over to my desk, and this is sort of what happened. It was not a good experience. So we had been shipping this app for about a year now, and the following year, things just got a little too crazy for me. I was looking at, you know, adopting auto layout and doing dynamic resizing, and just this was just for iPad. Not forget iPhone for a second. This was just on iPad. Things are becoming extremely fragmented in the tablet world. And we see this more and more in the US. Not forget Asia for a second. Just in the US, right? In order to get roughly 90% market share, based off of data from, I believe, about last quarter, right? So this is a sort of rolling metric. We had to target 288 devices in order to get 90% market share in the US. So that's kind of crazy from my perspective. And so we were looking for this testing solution internally to sort of white label or build. And we sort of did, you know, what Apple would do. We sort of said, hey, we have this problem. Let's build a solution out for it. And it was really kind of nice. So what we looked at was, how do we get the maximum market coverage with the lowest effort, right? Can we build something that allows a developer to script his interaction, throw it at hundreds of real devices, and get a feedback loop that's super tight and super real, right? And it has to be functional. It has to be from the functional UI down to the business logic, right? You can't just unit test a mobile app because it's kind of impossible to get 100% coverage of the real experience, right? You have to do it functionally from the UI down. You have to be able to have resiliency, right? Somebody broke the build. What does that mean, right? They changed some business logic in the unit test to where either the build broke from a compiler perspective or they failed a regression from the unit test suite, right? So this is the similar sort of metaphor in mobile app testing is you have to have this mechanism of testing your app from the UI down. So every time you iterate, you don't completely break the actual QA story. And I'll describe this a little bit more. But what was really important to us was this whole notion of a continuous integration process feeding data in and sort of iterating on the data out. So for us, not only was it important to have QA managers or dev leads really really up to date with the actual nitty-gritty of the app, but sort of the continuous integration story had to be super tight. And of course, for the QA managers, this had to be really nice. They needed pretty graphs and stuff to look at. And of course, the feedback cycle. You guys are devs, you understand. The feedback cycle for any QA story is really nice, has to be really nice, and it has to take, you know, as short as possible to iterate on a sort of a sprint. So let me skip this bit here, and let me talk about the UI aspect of it. So from our perspective, the user interaction and the functional tests were really super, super important. If you look at the way testing has been done in the past, you have unit testing, which is testing discrete units of business logic and sort of faking and mocking, quote unquote, the actual interactions. But that wasn't good enough because suddenly you had to test the actual buttons and the buttons were scaling up and down and they were being modified in different ways. So from our perspective, not only was it important to be able to detect changes in the UI, but but sort of work against that and not have to worry about them. So what we actually do is we interact with the label. And we sort of capture bugs and crashes and issues with memory. And what we do at that point is really just plug directly into that button, right? So we don't just recognize that this button exists at pixel 500 and scales out to, you know, 550 and 250. We don't just basically look at areas of the screen or sort of screen scrape or image recognize. We actually tie into the button at the object level, or tie into the tab bar at the object level, or tie into the map at the object level, such that you can test an app the caliber of Facebook or Google Maps, right? You can actually test those native-looking, feeling apps because it is a native QA story. And then, of course, for us, again, the continuous integration story was super nice. So, you know, we looked at the world and said, hey, if we could get this, this would be great. It would make it much easier for us to dev as a platform, much easier for devs who are building apps on top of our platform to have a really great experience, and this is what we came up with. So, cool. So, sorry. This is a cloud environment for you to test your app on real devices and get instantaneous access to what it looks like and what it feels like. So this is the best possible tool for the job. I needed fast iteration cycles. I needed hundreds of real devices, which somebody else goes and buys and installs. I needed an amazing way to view them, but I also needed a really quick way to step through it. And this is the Tesco grocery app. Let me show you the actual real live running app. So this is Ardeo here. This is their sign-in process. And this is Android only. But you'll notice that I can sort of zoom in and out and get a first-class picture of their sign-in process, right? Their funnel, their real business, which is getting users to sign up for their service and make sure that this experience just works, right? That's really critical to you as a dev. You write code for people. You don't write code for machines. You write code for people who at the end of the day, use your software. And just being able to know that it works on the device is a critical facet. Forget the fact that you can navigate from one screen to another. Forget the fact that you can go in and write really nice interactions and swipe and zoom and pinch and what have you. Just knowing that it works is often the first step. So when people see this, they're absolutely astounded. And so am I. Great. So let's see here. Let's go back to the slides. There we go. So that's sort of platform meets test cloud, and it gives you sort of a highlight of where you're coming from a dev side, and where your skills are today, and sort of where we can take you. And that's sort of the testing side of the house, which is how do you go from C# to iOS and Android, and how do you iterate back on that code base. To get started right now, you can go in and try out Sharp Shirt. And then people come and ask me sort of, how do I get started? How do I go and actually start building these apps? Well, you can go to Xamarin University today and start signing up for classes. So as a function of being a Xamarin developer, you get access to university content from people who care and people who shipped. I think that's super important. It gives you live, online, instructor-led training for an unlimited period. For 12 months, right? So what that means is you get access to all the latest bits that are in iOS 7 and learn how to leverage them. And you get to do that when they update to iOS 8 and Android 5. So over the course of that 12 months, any updates that happen, we create content for you. We have instructors who are educated in that, and we put them live online in front of a WebEx for you guys to get immediate feedback on your code. So you can go into the site and pick out sort of how to structure your curriculum, and it's sort of catered to your timeline. So you can go in and at 7 or 8 p.m. get access to a course on touch and interaction or memory management best practices. You can do that today, and you can do that at any time that you like. Right, so it's really, really nice and flexible for people here who might be sort of retraining or might be parents, and it covers the spectrum of sort of beginning to advanced. And of course, at the end of the day, we have that certification bit, which allows you to sort of be recognized for investing the time in retooling and retraining a little bit and getting up and running. So we're really excited about that. It sort of gives you this leg up that you wouldn't get just organically by sort of running your first app, getting this null reference exception, and then going over to google.com, and your feedback loop is null reference exception with some obscure error code, and then trying to, you know, figure out what that means. So that's really nice. I wish I had this 4 or 5 years ago when I started writing mobile apps. This is a first-class way to really get up and running. So what I'd encourage you today is, first of all, stop by the booth, booth 1700. Come talk to us about how we can get you bootstrapped and up and running. The second thing is go ahead to xamarin.com/sharpshirt and get access to an amazing template application, which will show you how to sort of architect your app from the ground up, how to structure your UI in a really nice way, how to connect your app to a backend using standard .NET APIs, and of course, you get a free shirt out of it. So awesome. Thanks so much.